No, we're in the book of Nehemiah at the moment, and just two very short readings. The first in Nehemiah and chapter 6 and verse 15. Nehemiah chapter 6 and verse 15. So the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month Elul, in 52 days. Now please over to chapter 8, and we'll read at verse 1. And all the people gathered themselves together as one man into the street that was before the water gate. And they spake unto Ezra the scribe to bring the book of the law of Moses, which the Lord had commanded to Israel. And Ezra the priest brought the law before the congregation, both of men and women, and all that could hear with understanding, upon the first day of the seventh month. And he read therein before the street that was before the water gate, from the morning until midday, before the men and the women and those that could understand. And the ears of all the people were attentive unto the book of the law. And we look to God to again just bless to us the reading of his good word. Now last week, although we suggested that from chapter 1 through to chapter 13, the book of Nehemiah covers a period of some 13 to 15 years, we are considering within those years the fact that in the narrative, four specific months that are referred to. We said the 4 months relate to the four seasons of the year, and that in a chronological order: winter, spring, summer, and autumn. And we said or suggested that as each month is mentioned, the season of the year seems somehow to reflect the circumstances of the people of God in the accompanying narrative. The first month we thought about came in the very opening verse of the book, the month Chislew. We said that was the 9th month in the Jewish calendar, corresponding to our late November and early December, to winter time. And we suggested that in a sense such it was in the experience of God's people. We noted that a report was given to Nehemiah concerning the Jews which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And we observed that the report was this, that the people were in great affliction, and the walls of Jerusalem were broken down. We might say it was something like winter time, a cold period in the experience of the people of God. We noted that the second month that is mentioned comes at the commencement of chapter 2, the month Nisan, the first month in the Jewish year, corresponding to our late March and early April. And thus we saw it relates to springtime, when nature begins to stir itself. And we briefly saw in chapter 2 how in the providential dealings of God on behalf of his people, we see something of the first shoots of recovery in relation to the condition of the people of God. Now the third month that is mentioned comes in chapter 6 and verse 15. We read these words, so the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month Elul, the 6th month in the Jewish calendar, corresponding to our late August and early September. Thus we might say corresponding to late summer. That, of course, would be a time when the harvest would have been gathered in, the work in the fields was nearly over, and the people could look back upon their labours. And we might say, wasn't it like that in the experience of Nehemiah as we move through the period between chapters 3 to 6? We have an account of the work that was done and the difficulties that the people encountered. Now, it's not my purpose to deal this evening in any detail with those chapters. But I want to just observe, first of all, that chapter 3 is primarily concerned with those who were devoted to the work. And I want to pick up from that just three simple lessons that really lie on the surface of the chapter. The first thing we might observe is it records the building of the wall, that none of the people were exempt from that responsibility. And if you read through that chapter at your leisure, you'll find a wide variety of people are mentioned. For instance, in verse 1, we read about priests. In verse 8, about goldsmiths and apothecaries. In verses 9, 12, and 14, about rulers. In verse 12, about daughters. In verses 31 and 32, about merchants. And so we can pick up an easy lesson, that none of the people were to consider themselves exempt from the responsibility of work in building the wall of the city. Can't we say that it's no difference in regard to a local assembly? We can say tonight that every member has a responsibility. You remember how Paul says in 1 Corinthians 12 that the manifestation of the Spirit is given to every man to profit withal. So every member of the assembly has responsibility in relation to the work. Again, another little lesson we can pick up, very simple lessons, but the chapter is actually permeated with a spirit of fellowship. And so, as those building are mentioned, we find expressions like this. Next unto him, that's mentioned 6 times. Next unto them, that's mentioned 7 times. After him, that's mentioned 14 times. After them is mentioned twice. And though it seems from the narrative that some apparently labored alone, others labored in teams, they were all engaged in the one thing, and none labored independently of the work of their other brethren. And we might say, for its success, the work actually involved a strong spirit of fellowship. Again, we apply the lesson. Is it any different in an assembly? Do you remember how in Philippians 1, Paul speaks about striving together for the faith of the gospel? In Colossians 2, he says, knit together in love. And so there is a need for a warm spirit of fellowship if the work is to profit. Again, another lesson is this. In the chapter, chapter 3, we have a divine review of those who worked in building the wall. Who they were, what they did. And we'll see in a moment for one group an observation of what they had failed to do. And that might well remind us tonight of the words of 1 Samuel 2:3. The Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. We know likewise that our work will one day be reviewed. Our lives will one day be reviewed at the judgment seat of Christ. Do you remember how Paul speaks of it in 1 Corinthians 3? Every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, of what sort it is. If any man's work abide, which he hath built thereupon, he shall receive a reward. If any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss, but he himself shall be saved, yet so as by fire. Now, as we indicated, not all who are mentioned in Nehemiah 3 were commended. You'll find in verse 5 references made to the Tekoites, and we're told their nobles put not their necks to the work of the Lord. The only note of direct condemnation in the chapter. Again, remember what we quoted from 1 Corinthians chapter 3. If any man's work abide, he shall receive a reward. If any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss. Doesn't touch his salvation. That's dependent on the work of Christ. But he will lose the reward that he could have had if he had been more diligent and more faithful in his work in the assembly. And that surely is something to challenge us tonight. You know, we can, I guess is often said, we can view the judgment seat of Christ a bit like sort of a Sunday school prize giving, and you want everyone to get a reward. But you know, thinking of it, I find it a very sober, a very serious matter that my service, my life, is going to be reviewed. Reviewed, I know, with a view to judgment, but I find it a solemn thing to just think about that coming scene of judgment at the judgment seat of Christ. Now, we haven't mentioned, but we are told in chapter 6, verse 15, the verse we read, that the wall was finished in 52 days. The Holy Spirit specifically mentions that. And it was, of course, something that obviously testified to the people's commitment to the work. But if in chapter 3 we have those devoted to the work, in chapters 4 right through to chapter 6 we have an account of some of the difficulties that were encountered in the work. Now you'll find the first hint of potential opposition is actually seen in the book before the work had even begun. In chapter 2, verse 10, reference is made to men who were exceedingly grieved. A man had come to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. Two men are mentioned, Sanballat, a Moabite, Tobiah, an Ammonite. And then down in verse 19 of chapter 2, we've got a third man, and his name is Geshem, an Arabian. And we discover in the chapter that those men together, they ridiculed, they despised Nehemiah and his company. And you know, looking back over the ancestry, the origin, the family origin of those three men, the first two can be traced back to Lot's incest, recorded in Genesis 19, while Geshem the Arabian was a descendant of Abraham's son, Ishmael, by the Egyptian handmaid, Hagar. And that should be a sober reminder to us that one step out of fellowship with God can have serious, lasting implications, not just for ourselves, but also for succeeding generations. But once the work began, the difficulties intensified. Very quickly, as I said, we're not going to look at it in detail, but in chapter 4, we might say from outside, from without, the people of God, the workers were faced by indignation. Verse 1, it came to pass, when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. If we were to examine the Hebrew words, wroth, great indignation, we could convey something of the force of them by saying this: he was filled with blazing anger or blazing rage. In verse 2, others join him. Together they ridicule the workers, but the building continued. So when you come to chapter 4, verse 8, the enemy resort to threats. And in verse 10 we read, and Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall. So the first difficulty, they were faced by indignation on the part of their opponents. But then in chapter 5, we find a problem arose from within. That is, from within the people of God themselves. We might say not indignation, but division. Verse 1, there was a great cry of the people and of their wives against their brethren, the Jews. And basically the poor of the people, well, their need for food was taken advantage of by the wealthy, the nobles and rulers, who sought to enrich themselves because of the plight of their poor brethren. The people complain, verse 5, our flesh is as the flesh of our brethren, our children as their children, and though we bring into bondage our sons and our daughters to be servants. Neither is it in our power to redeem them. For other men have our lands and vineyards. In other words, they'd all been sold in this search to get food. You know, in Matthew 12, the Lord said this: every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation. And every city or house divided against itself shall not stand. There was division in chapter 5. We remember that there were divisions in Corinth. And you know, sadly, history bears witness to the damage that division in an assembly can bring. And let's learn the lesson. It's not always problems from without that can damage the testimony. There can be problems within. And my brother, my sister, if you enjoy unity in the assembly, you value it. For there are assemblies where that is not the case. And faithful souls long that they might experience it. So there was a problem from without, chapter 4, indignation. There were difficulties within, division, chapter 5. Then those being addressed, when we come to chapter 6, the narrative returns again to attacks from without. And now there is an attempt at division. It came to pass, when Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem, the rest of our enemies, heard that I had builded the wall, Sanballat, Geshem, sent unto me, saying, come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. And you could read down the chapter. They turned their attention upon Nehemiah himself. They suggest that they have his interests at heart, but they falsely accuse him. They actually hired a false prophet against him. And you'll see how they're seeking by deception to bring the work to a halt. Now again, I want to just draw out a few simple lessons. Doing any work for God is rarely without difficulties. And as we've seen, problems can arise from without and from within. But you know, wherever they appear, we learn this, that all is seen and known to God. The names, the methods employed by those who seek to disrupt the work from without, but equally, you might say, the way in which those within treat their fellow brethren. And you know, just putting the two things together, you know, sometimes those without can show more zeal and determination to destroy the work than the determination and zeal of those who are seeking to engage in the work. Now, they are challenging lessons as we survey those first 6 chapters. But coming back, despite the difficulties, When we come to our verse, chapter 6, verse 15, the wall was finished. Nehemiah could look back with some satisfaction upon a task completed. Verse 16 says, with this result, that when all our enemies heard, all the heathen about us saw, they were much cast down in their own eyes. They perceived this work was wrought of our God. The enemies heard, the heathen saw, and the impact on both was the same. They were forced, however reluctantly, to acknowledge the work was of God. But we have seen the wall was completed in 52 days. We said the month Elul. It corresponds to the end of August, early September. So actually the work was carried forward in the heat of the summer months. Late July to early September. And the very completion of the wall witnesses to the commitment, to the resilience of those who engaged in the work. Surely we desire to see a work done for God. It won't be accomplished without commitment and without people who, in the words of chapter 4, verse 6, have a mind to work. Now finally, come to the fourth month that is mentioned. Within chapters 7 to 9, there are four references to the seventh month. Chapter 7, verse 73, chapter 8, verse 2, verse 14, and then the month, although it's not numbered, is mentioned in chapter 9, verse 1. Is not named in the narrative. It is what the Jews know today as the month Tishri, corresponding to 8 late September, mid-October, and thus to autumn. You will find it is called in 1 Kings 8:2 Ethanim, a name which means permanent brooks, a fitting name for the season, for it marked the commencement of what is known in the Bible as the early rains, when the earth would be refreshed and the water courses that had run dry in the summer would be refilled. And that is reflected in the narrative, isn't it? Chapter 8, verses 1, 2. All the people gathered themselves together as one man into the street that was before the water gate. They spake unto Ezra the scribe to bring the book of the law of Moses, which the Lord had commanded to Israel. Ezra the priest brought the law before the congregation, all that could hear with understanding, upon the first day of the seventh month. Now much more we could say, but I'm conscious of the time. But you can read down just a few verses. They gathered themselves together. The exercise seems to be their own. Wasn't Ezra, wasn't Nehemiah that gathered them? They gathered as one man. That spirit of unity, it actually fills the chapter. They spake unto Ezra, bring the book of the law of Moses, which the Lord had commanded Israel. They acknowledge its authority, that it was for all Israel. In verse 3, the attention they gave, the ears of all the people were attentive unto the book of the law. Many other lessons we could draw out, but you'll notice verses 14 to 18, their obedience to the word. May we, brethren and sisters, have a similar appetite, a similar desire for the Word of God, for the refreshment that the Scriptures can bring in a barren and dry wilderness world. We trust God will bless His Word to us this evening.